right, everybody. Welcome back to the Spartans, Wolverines, and Beards podcast. Coming to you live from Jordan's living room, and not living room, but bedroom in my basement.
Technically, it's my pseudo man cave. It's my office, pseudo man cave. There's no TV, so it doesn't really count as a man cave.
I'll count it.
It's full of sports memorabilia. That's all.
See, I'm trying to work on mine slowly but surely. I'm getting envious of yours, not with all the Michigan stuff, but
I actually need more wall space. I have too many jerseys and not enough wall.
Damn, that's a good problem to have.
I guess.
All right. Anyways, get back on track. Thank you guys for listening to us again this week. Like we alluded to, this is our exciting, our bread and butter, the deep dive episode.
Probably my second favorite thing to do with college football. I am a recruiting junkie.
What's your first favorite?
Recruiting would be number one. And then the deep dives, I do enjoy a good dive.
Good dive. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at today when previewing the show. Just going to do a deep dive, but first we're going to cover some high school sports. Close out, touch a little bit on the Lions. Going to Jacksonville this week. Hopefully there'll be some changes when we see it, but I'll believe it when it happens. but before we really start getting into our deep dive, make sure you, if you haven't already, like us on Facebook, Twitter, follow us. Not only that, but make sure you take a look at Watershed Voice. If you haven't yet, take a look, see if you can subscribe to them. It's a very good local news source for St. Joe County. I think I've been saying it's the lowest you can get. It's like $6.50 a month for a year subscription, something like that. So it's
not a bad price at all.
Not at all. We're just going to start off with a little bit of news first. Two nights ago, LA Lakers win their, 17th NBA title.
It's some ungodly number.
So I guess it's kind of, you don't hear a lot about it yet, but I'm going to beg the question to you, Jordan. Do you think LeBron James should retire?
I mean, I don't know why he would. He gets all the money that he gets, and he only has to play half the games because they can sit, because they're load management or whatever the hell it's called anymore. I don't know. I wouldn't surprise me if he did, but I don't think he will.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he will, but what a way to retire with everything that happened with the Lakers organization this year. Kobe passing away in January, season getting suspended, LeBron kind of leading the charge for the NBA bubble, for them to end up winning the bubble and winning the title. I mean, it would be kind of be a fitting end to a pretty illustrious career.
I think his ego gets in the way, too, though, and he wants to take a shot at getting to that sixth ring like Jordan, though, to help the GOAT conversation.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that. I think, didn't he say after the game, like, he Lakers want their respect and he wants some damn respect or something like that, too, which
I honestly didn't watch a single minute of any NBA game this year, so I honestly couldn't tell you.
But, yeah, interesting. I think the Lakers, to repeat, are going to need some point guard help. Would not be surprised to see them go after, say, a Chris Paul, trying to level out the Lakers team. But that'll be for a later day. So then our second bit of news is the ALCS and the NLCS have been determined, and they're already underway. The Rays and the Astros for the...
These are at neutral sites.
Neutral sites.
Kind of an interesting twist.
Yeah, pretty interesting. So the Rays and the Astros, and the Dodgers and the Braves.
Yeah, I believe the Rays are up 2-0
already.
Yeah,
Rays are up 2-0.
Right?
Kershaw was a scratch for tonight.
Yeah, saw that. Tony Gosselin's going to start rookie.
Rookie starting against the Braves.
Not a fun situation.
No, and you're already down 1-0, and the Braves can knock the tar out of the baseball, so...
Yeah, they can hit it. I would love to see a Rays-Braves World Series. Nobody wants to see Dodgers-Astros again. I mean, let's let something different. The Rays are so fun because it's like the Island of Misfit Toys. A bunch of guys that got cast out from other teams and kind of flopped, and then some young talent. it's fun to watch the Rays. And then the Braves are just the epitome of the youth movement.
And, you know, and I think I saw something, and now I don't know if it's true, which I'll fact check it later, but the Rays starting rotation only makes like $12.5 million a year, as opposed to Jose Altuve, who makes $12.7 million a year.
Yeah, there was another thing I saw when the Rays were playing the Yankees. The Yankees starting lineup made more than the Rays' entire 25-man roster.
Which, that kind of gives hope to a Tigers franchise who's not spending a boatload of money right now.
But the Tigers franchise also doesn't have the player development the Rays have. True. Because they've always this. They've always found a way to make prospects out of players that nobody ever thought about. So, no, I've been watching baseball. Fans are starting to come back, too, I saw. So, that makes baseball feel a little more normal.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
Pretty interesting series. Definitely don't want to see the Astros, like you said, and the Dodgers. That's pretty boring. I mean, if you were to take a guess right now, do you think you're going to see a Rays-Braves final?
I do. I think they're the two hottest teams right now. The Rays just keep finding ways to win. And then I think the Braves, just that lineup is just dangerous.
So,
they can hurt you.
So who do you think would win the series?
Oh, boy. You know, the Braves always have been my National League team, back even when I was a kid, because I know when we were growing up, it was Chipper Jones and Andrew Jones and Javi Lopez and Glavin, Smoltz, and Maddox. I mean, I always loved the Braves. So I think I would side with the Braves. I do think it would be a 6 or 7 game series, though. I don't think either team blows it out.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I think that series is going to go the distance, and I think that'll be a fun one.
I hope that's what it ends up being. I hope it's Braves-Rays. I think baseball deserves that. I think baseball needs that. I think the sports world needs kind of like a double underdog story kind of thing. Even though the Rays were the number one seed and they won the most games this year, but they literally came out of nowhere. And one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. And they.
Yeah, very true. I mean, and if the Rays win, that's two Tampa teams that are winning the title calling the shouting out to the Buccaneers. I mean, you never know for this.
They do have the goat.
They do have the goat. All right, Jordan. Well, do you have anything else you want to discuss, or are you ready to roll in some high school sports?
No, I think news-wise we can shut that down for now, and we'll get into the local sports.
All right, sounds good. Go ahead and hold on tight, and we will be back shortly with some high school sports.
All right, everybody, we are back with our local high school sports update for this week. I'm going to run down real quick the results from last week's games, including the big one in the SW10, and then kind of look forward to next week's matchups. Kind of a smoother sailing slate, it looks like. Wow, that was a mouthful to say.
That's pretty good. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, that was free-flowing. For next week, only a couple relatively balanced matchups. We'll see how they go. But let's go ahead and roll right into this. So last week's results, Three Rivers at Edwardsburg. Cats fall to 0-4. Edwardsburg moves to 4-0 with a dominant 64-7 win, just kind of continuing the trend for the Wildcats this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot statistically to talk too much about for this game. Edwardsburg dominated 437 yards to Three Rivers 264. Looks like the turnover bug's really what plagued Three Rivers. Three turnovers to Edwardsburg's 0. Gavin Buter, 6 for 21, 81 yards passing, 2 INTs. Looks like Three Rivers on the ground didn't do a horrible job, but it still wasn't enough. Addison Abnett, 68 yards. Ethan Crooks, 51 yards. Drew Brown, 27. Connor Quake, 22. And Gavin Buter, 15 and 1 TD.
So moving on, Dowagiac traveled down to Sturgis. Got a 12-0 victory over the Trojans. Looked like kind of a tough-fought, hard-fought battle there for Sturgis. That was a win a game I felt like they really needed to have for some momentum.
Yeah, and you know, Jordan, I'm looking it over, and I don't know if my stats are 100% correct. But it looks like the time of possession was huge for Dwajak.
That sounds like Dwajak.
Yeah, almost 30 minutes to Sturgis's 18. So it really just sounds like they just absolutely took the air out of the ball and just smothered Sturgis. Riley Kane, 5 for 10, passing 20 yards. Blake Berkey, 7 carries for 30 yards. And Roman Robinson, 4 receptions for 17 yards.
And then our game of the week last week in the SW10, Centerville Bulldogs go to Mendon. This game actually got moved up to Thursday, I was told, because they couldn't find officials for Friday night. So they moved the game to Thursday night, and Centerville went over there and absolutely smacked Mendon. And as I've mentioned every other week, I have an inside source for Centerville, and he said that score probably should have been more. It really seemed like Centerville kind of let off the gas on them a little bit.
Yeah, and with that game, congratulations to Centerville. They secured their Southwest 10 football conference title for that. Yeah. And it's their first time they've been league champs since 1979 in St. Joe Valley Conference.
Wow, that is a long time.
Yeah, so I mean, that is absolutely worth celebrating. Looks good for them. Looks like Sam Todd led the way with 3 rushing touchdowns. Just overall, sounds like a pretty dominant victory for Centerville, for them having quite a bit of a momentum now. So let's see how far they can go.
Yep. Constantine at Fenville ended up being a forfeit. Fenville had too many injuries for that game, so we can skip right on past that. White Pigeon had Cassopolis, the Raiders. They had to go to Cass, correct? Yep, went to Cass. Got a good win, 20-0. Kind of furthering our point that we've been hammering on here, that White Pigeon's a better team than what their 0-2 start kind of showed. You know, they had to start out with Mendon and Centerville to start the year, and 2 tough losses, but they've rebounded with 2 big wins in a row now.
Yeah, very much so. Also kind of a side note for White Pigeon, it's their second ever win against Cassopolis, their first one dating back to 1984. There's some pretty big achievements for some local teams this weekend. Like you said, White Pigeon basically just took the air out of the ball against Cass. Only 177 to 83 total yards in that game. So that's an absolute defensive just mauling.
Yep, that'll do. So one thing we forgot to touch on here, going backtrack just a little bit. With Centerville's win over Mendon, they do come in at this week's state rankings in Division 8 at number 7. So that puts them just behind a few teams here in Division 8. So kind of a projection for the playoff. They look to rank pretty well in their division, something we wanted to touch on. Moving on to our next game, North Adams-Drome went to Burr Oak, and Burr Oak, as we've been saying, just did Burr Oak things and won 49-12, remained undefeated on the year, and pretty much maintained their dominance in their conference.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like you said, Burr Oak did Burr Oak things. With that win, they clinched a share of the SCAA Division B conference title, and they can secure it outright this upcoming week against Litchfield. So just looked like statistically, Matthew Green was 4 for 14, 82 yards, 2 TDs. Branson Hernandez was 4 for 8, 63 yards, 2 TDs. Just overall another dominant win for the Bobcats.
Yep, and our final recap football game for last week, Athens goes to Colon, and Colon absolutely put a shellacking on them, 55-6. Colon's still alive for their conference title. They're going to need some big wins here down the stretch, but they are still alive.
Yeah, very much so. And Colon just absolutely just destroyed Athens, 587-101 for total yardage. Quarterback Simon Vinson had a decently good night, rushing for 250 yards, 3 touchdowns, while passing for 3 scores and 95 yards. Going to show my age a little bit. That's some Pat White West Virginia numbers right there.
It's a good name Thank drop. You. I like it. So I think that's all of our football scores for last week. Just touching on the volleyball games we highlighted last week, Three Rivers did drop their matchup with Edwardsburg, and straight sets 3-0. I believe, didn't you say Mendon won their match last week? So that sets up a pretty good matchup this week with, what you said, was Mendon and Centerville.
Yeah, right? Mendon and Centerville. Just kind of a backstory here. The Hornets are 18-1 overall. They're actually ranked number one in Division Four, so that's pretty big. Bulldogs come in at 11-4. And actually Centervilles are the defending league champs. So that's going to be an interesting matchup since Mendon won the state title last year. So it's going to be interesting to see if Mendon can actually get over the Centerville hump this year.
Yeah. And the girls trying to redeem the football team for their loss. So maybe the volleyball team for the Hornets get it.
Yeah, very much so. That's going to be a fun matchup this week.
We will see. Time will tell. So looking into week five for the football schedule, we will start with Three Rivers traveling on the road to Plainwell. Plainwell sits at 3-1, 2-1 in the conference. All intents and purposes, that just doesn't look good for the Wildcats here. I think their big chance for a win comes next, the following week, not this coming week. But, yeah, Lane, what are your thoughts there?
I think Three Rivers doesn't need to look ahead too much. They need to stay focused on Plainwell, try and right some wrongs, get some X's and O's figured out this week so they can be ready for their next week's matchup.
Yep, good point. So moving on, Sturgis goes to Otsego. The Trojans are 2-1. Bulldogs of Otsego are 1-3. Looks like this is another chance for Sturgis to rebound after a couple tough ones offensively against Pawpaw and Dowagiac. They really need to get some momentum building before the playoffs start up.
Yeah, absolutely. Sturgis is kind of an interesting team. You wonder what their identity is going forward. So this could be a game for them to figure that out.
Yeah. Moving on to our Southwest 10 Conference champion, Centerville Bulldogs. Just feels good to say that. I feel like I should keep rewarding them for that. They travel to Hartford, who is 0-4, and really the 0-4 that Hartford is doesn't really do it justice. They've only scored 40 points this year, so I imagine the Bulldogs roll up a big one and continue the train
moving. Yeah, absolutely. Just a game where they need to stay focused, not get too many in, like hope everybody stays healthy, nobody gets injured, so they can get prepared for the playoffs.
Yeah. Moving on to our next game, Mendon at home against Cass. And if there's one thing I can imagine is the Hornets are probably pretty pissed off after their game last week and getting thumped like they did. So I feel bad for Cass this week because I have a feeling the Hornets are going to try to come out.
Are you going to say the Hornets are going to swarm the Rangers?
Ooh, I like it. It's very punny. It's
funny.
Yeah, so I think not a good day to be a Cass Ranger, in my opinion. Moving forward, our next game is the one that I saw that kind of was very, I guess, intriguing because I don't know a ton about their opponent here, but Constantine travels to Kalamazoo United, who look to be there 4-0 right now, and they've really they've dominated so far this season. I mean, the last two games they've won 44-6 and 42-7. If Constantine wants any shot in conference here, this is a win that they've got to have at 3-1. So this is going to be a big showdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a little bit of a backstory. If you don't know, Kalamazoo United is K Christian and Kalamazoo Hackett together, like combined. So that school is getting the really good athletes from Hackett and the really good athletes from Christian. And every year, man, they put a solid squad out there. Constantine's got their hands full this week.
Yeah, that's what threw me for a loop because I pulled up my website with all my information and stuff, and this site still has their team listed as Hackett. So it's not switched. The site has not switched it to Kalamazoo United, even though they've been at Kalamazoo United for like 5 or 6 years now, I believe. So that'll be interesting. It's a tough game for the Falcons on the road. It's a game they got to win if they want a shot at the conference title. Moving to our next, we have White Pigeon. Like we've kind of referenced here, they've had two good wins. I see nothing here moving forward with Decatur coming to town. I think the Chiefs can roll here and kind of keep building some energy, momentum, and have that good energy going towards
the season. Yeah, absolutely. I think just looking at everything White Pigeon does, I could see them being a sleeper team heading into the playoffs this year.
Yeah. We move into our 8-man. Like Lane had mentioned before with Burr Oak, they are at Litchfield. Win locks up the outright conference title, and Litchfield is 0-4 on the year, so the odds are in the Bobcats' favor to get that conference title, but you got to still – games aren't won on paper. Still got to go out there and get
absolutely. I mean, there's really not much to be said with that. Burrow just needs to stay focused and keep grinding.
Yep, and then our last game, Colon going to Climax Scotts. Very interesting here because Climax hasn't been an eight-man team for very, very long. I'm trying to – this is only their second year in eight-man. I thought that was intriguing when I saw their name. I'm like, wait a minute, this is a team that used to have battles with Mendon. So only their second year in eight-man. They are 2-2 on the year. From what it looks like opponents, Colon has beaten some people that Climax has played. So the, I guess, like opponents would favor the Magi, but I think this could end up
being a pretty good game. Climax Scotts is a very good football program. I haven't been drinking, I swear. That's going to be a good matchup for them. And a kind of an interesting note, Climax Scotts head coach, Coach Lang's son, was the head coach of Centerville this past season, and then he ended up taking the job for Plainwell. So, kind of interesting.
Gotcha. Yep. So that kind of, like I said, the schedule this week, not super loaded. Couple big matchups for the Constantine Falcons and the Colon Magi, and then Burr Oak looking to lock up a conference title. But otherwise, I think locally, that's probably all we have. Lane, did you have any more we need to touch on?
Nah, man, I'm ready to dive.
It's time to get in our submarine and make the dive into our Spartans and Wolverines. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with our first preview. Alrighty, we have boarded our submarine. We are in the deep waters. We are making our way out to sea, and we are diving. And our sea happens to be over East Lansing because we are diving into the Michigan State Spartans first. They always say ladies first. So
son of a bitch.
It was only appropriate to allow Lane to dive into the Spartans first and foremost.
You've been sitting on that one, haven't you?
There was a reason I wanted you to go first.
Damn it.
So just kind of a little preview what we're going to do here. Lane's going to run for maybe about 15 minutes or so, cover offense, defense, special teams, just kind of a breakdown of what he sees and what he feels like the team is and maybe what it needs to go in the future. And I will interject with kind of thoughts, questions, concerns that I may have for this team. And then we will take a quick break, and I will come back in and do the same thing for the Wolverines. So it's going to be – it'll be heavy towards what Lane's thoughts are here, but we will have some back and forth and some conversation about each team. So with that said, Lane, the floor is yours. Tell us about the Mel Tucker-led Michigan State Spartans.
Thank you for your time, Jordan. Leading off with my debate voice. Anyways, so getting into the 2020 Michigan State football squad. Like you said, Mel Tucker is the new head coach coming from Colorado. If you did not know, Mark D'Antonio quit in January, February?
Yes. It was the end of January, first part of February, right in that time frame.
Okay. And which, if you are a loyal listener to our podcast, Jordan called that at our deep dive last season, that Mark D'Antonio was going to depart. And I said, there's no way.
And chalk another one up for the Wolverines.
Shut up. Anyway. So, yes, Mel Tucker coming over from Colorado. This past season, I believe they were 5-7, 6.
Are you saying Michigan State or are you saying Colorado?
Colorado.
Oh, I have no clue.
I don't know. It's the Buffs. We don't care. But
they were under 500. I can tell you that.
Yes, under 500. One season as their head coach. Just a little bit of a coaching background for Mel Tucker. In 2015, he was the assistant head coach for Alabama as well as their defensive backs coach, which if you remember, Alabama won a national title that year. So a little bit of a feather in a cap there. In 2016, he was the Georgia Bulldogs defensive coordinator with Kirby Smart. So ended up taking his talents to Colorado. Then from Colorado, he ended up in East Lansing. So with that being said, we last season all saw Michigan State and the absolute god-awful offense that they put on the field every single week. So some of the changes that the offense has been looking at is Jay Johnson is the new offensive coordinator. He coached a little bit at Minnesota and Colorado. One thing I think we're going to be looking at with this Michigan State squad this year is you're going to see a lot more no-huddle offense. And a lot of three wide receiver sets. So you're going to be seeing them spread the defense out a little bit more, which it's going to be an interesting thing to see for Michigan State football. Because if you remember Mark D'Antonio, a lot of two tight end sets like to run it down your throat. So
That's a major change of pace for Spartan fans.
Yes, exactly. Which I feel.
But like, I think it's something they've been calling for. I mean,
I've been calling for it.
I don't have
it.
My finger on the pulse of all Spartans, but I need to say, I know you have been.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly where the game of football is going. It's a lot more fast, no huddle. Don't worry about defense as much. Let's just put as many points on the board as we can.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. So looking at our QB1, Rocky Lombardi is the presumptive QB1 this season. Last season didn't play a whole lot. Brian Lewerke stayed decently healthy throughout the season. 2018, you got to see Lombardi come in as a freshman. I mean, as a freshman, he was okay. Not anything exciting, but what's going to be interesting is he has two very good quarterbacks sitting behind him. One of them's Theo Day, and the other one is Peyton Thorne, freshman. And before COVID had struck, the rumor was that Peyton Thorne was threatening to take over the QB1 slot.
That's what I was going to say. That's something that I had been hearing, was that him and Theo Day, for that matter, had been pushing Lombardi pretty hard. And obviously Camp Buzz, that's always a thing,
right?
You know, it's, unless you have an incumbent starter, I mean, it's always, oh, the backups are so good, they're really pushing the guy,
right? And I think it's going to be interesting to see next weekend with Rutgers what's going to happen. I would not be the least bit surprised to see all three of them play, just to try and get a tune up and see who's going to be leading them into the Ann Arbor the following week. So but with the next part of their offense, Elijah Collins is returning along with Connor Hayward, who was going to transfer at the end of the season last year. It was part of the mass exodus of Michigan State players for Mark D'Antonio. He is coming back. So we got a pretty nice 1-2 punch for our backfield this season. Elijah Collins last year rushed for just under 1,000 yards, but 4.5 yards a carry for a pretty abysmal offensive line. So I think that's definitely looking something to look forward to. One of the big question marks this season, though, is our wide receiver core. We lost all three of our top wide receivers last year. So the presumptive 1 and 2 are Jalen Naylor and Trey Mosley. Both are – Naylor is – a sophomore, and same with Mosley. Jaden
Naylor got hurt last year.
Yeah,
right? He was tears ACL or something.
Yeah, yep, exactly. He only had 15 grabs through four games, and then he got injured, so he didn't get a whole lot of time last year. But he's going to be the presumptive wide receiver one this year for this.
Yeah, he's your number one.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
He's a big time speed threat.
So. Exactly, and then an interesting name to look at for this wide receiver core is Jaden Reed, transfer from Western Michigan. As a freshman, he was a All-American with 56 grabs. So the talent is definitely there. And if you know your history about Western does have a decent history of producing some pretty good wide receivers, Corey Davis, Greg Jennings. And they're saying Jaden Reed is a carbon copy of Corey Davis. So that's...
It's a good thing to be compared to.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I kind of grouped them in with our tight end cores, Matt Dotson, our tight end. last year only had 16 grabs in 8 games. What the big question mark I have for them is, what is he going to do in the run game? He absolutely needs to become a better blocking tight end, or else I could see him riding the pine pretty quick. Right. Now, I think the most interesting thing to this Michigan State offense is their offensive line. There are, let's see, 10 returning offensive linemen with starting experience. So that's, I mean, in the Big Ten, that's a big deal. Now, Matt Allen is going to be leading at center. Left tackle, which everybody knows, protecting the blind side, is going to be a huge deal. A.J. Curry is going to be the staple for that position. We also have Kevin Jarvis, who can also play tackle, as well as cycle in at guard. I think the offensive line is highly going to be contingent on those three names. If they can stay healthy, I think you do see a pretty interesting offensive unit. And just touching a little bit on the offensive line, they've got a new offensive line coach, Chris Kapilovic, and he was one of the rushing gurus for Larry Fedora at UNC. So then on the flip side of it, we've got the defense, which Michigan State for the past, oh, hell, probably 10 years has been known for a Mark D'Antonio-led defense. Always pretty lethal. Familiar face is returning, which is, I think, huge for them, is Mike Tressel is coming back. He will be the safeties coach for the team. However, our new defensive coordinator is Scotty Hazleton from K-State, which that will be interesting. And then the most biggest question mark I have for this defense is, what are they going to look like? Cause they only have 3 starters returning.
Yeah. I was going to say they're getting, well, and didn't one of the Panichuk brothers opt out?
He opted out and then he opted back in.
Is he back? He's back in. Okay, I didn't see that. I knew he was like one of the key returners and then he opted out and it's like, God, they just can't catch a break.
Right. Yep. Jacob Panichuk opted back in when the Big Ten announced they were coming back. And then their defensive line is also going to be led by Naquan Jones and Jacob Slade. So that's going to be an interesting defensive front.
Ooh-wee. Naquan Jones, a big boy, 6'4", 340. Holy shit.
Yeah, he's a big dude. He will. He's going to plug some gaps this year, man.
Yeah, he's going to need to.
And then our linebacking core, Antoine Simmons is back as well. Antoine Simmons is a very versatile linebacker for us. And there's always a kind of just a bulldog linebacker for Michigan State, whether it's the Bocce brothers. Antoine Simmons, I think, is going to fill that role. He can play either the Mike or a slot linebacker, so he's pretty athletic. He's coming back from 90 tackles in 2019. And then also, we've got an inside linebacker named Noah Harvey, who's returning. Had a pretty standout game in the Pinstripe Bowl against Wake Forest last year, 14 tackles. So it's going to be interesting to see how much he can contribute and how quickly he can get up to speed for the Spartans this year. And then always the no-fly zone that Michigan State has, that's definitely been gutted this past season. what's going to help is Harlan Barnett, who is a familiar name for Michigan State, is back. He was a defensive coordinator for Florida State. We know that didn't turn out well, so he is back in East Lansing coaching the secondary. Xavier Henderson returns at strong safety for us, as well as Shakira Brown, who started 5 games at corner. So we got a little bit of experience there. But Trey Person's also returning, but he needs to be a little more consistent to be more of a nickel, kind of a slot corner for us. And then getting into our special teams, it feels like Michigan State always has a special teams player that is there for 6 years.
And Matt Coughlin is
that guy. And Matt Coughlin is that guy.
Jesus Christ, he's been there for a decade.
he was all Big Ten in 2018. Last year, struggled early. Struggled pretty bad early. ended up being honorable mention for All Big Ten last season. Three game winners in his career for Sparty. So that's going to be nice to have a cool, calm, and collected kicker for us this season. And then Mitchell Crawford is actually a UTEP transfer, and he's going to be leading the way as our punter this year.
So there's one thing that you didn't touch on with the defense that I was kind of surprised by, because in my opinion, and this goes back to my thoughts of, as a recruiting guru, I think your best player, you didn't even mention on your, I think your best player on the entire roster, you didn't even mention.
Who's that?
And that's true sophomore Julian Barnett.
I don't know why I missed him.
So he's listed as a corner, 6'2", 190. But honestly, given the struggles with the offense, he will be a person that I think Mel Tucker will use on both sides of the ball. I think he ends up being your number one corner, and I think they end up using him in, on the offensive side, either in slot, in the slot position, or even just like a decoy of some kind. Even if they use him in kind of like the Jabril Peppers role, he's that kind of a dynamic athlete.
You know, and I don't know how I missed him. I really don't know.
Yeah. He's from Belleville. It was a big deal because, you know, that was Michigan was hard on him in recruiting, but the whole Belleville thing where the rift between Michigan and Belleville, that's just another great player, spurned Michigan, and it was to Sparty's advantage because I think this kid's a stud.
Yeah, I don't even know how I missed that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Hey, that's why we're
a team. We are a team.
I may want Michigan State to lose every game, but I want this podcast to win every week.
That makes me feel warm and fuzzy. All right. Yeah, but no, getting back in a little bit more about Michigan State, there's three key things that I ask myself about this team, and I think everybody needs to look at this team and wonder what are the three key things that if Michigan State's going to be successful, what do they need to achieve? First off is the offensive line. Can they stay healthy? As I previously mentioned, 10 different offensive linemen have starting experience for this squad. So that tells you that, one, yes, they're experienced, but two, there's been a lot of injuries for that squad.
The offensive line has been destroyed over the last few years.
And then the next question I have is, what does that wide receiver core look like? Jaden Reed, can he, like I said, the transfer from Western, can he perform at a high level in the Big Ten? Because, yes, you're against the MAC. Yes, you have success in the MAC, and yes, there are a lot of NFL players from the MAC, but the Big Ten is a different animal. What's going to happen when you're lining up against Michigan? What's going to happen when you're lining up in Iowa? Like, it's going to be a different monster for him. I think he's going to perform, and I think he's going to perform very well. I do think he's going to slide into maybe that wide receiver one conversation. But then the second part of the wide receiver core is they are extremely young. They've got three true freshmen that look like they are two true freshmen, one redshirt freshman, Ricky White, and then Terry Lockett and Ian Stewart. What are those guys going to look like, and how are they going to contribute to this team? And then lastly, the biggest question of all is, what does a Mel Tucker-led Michigan State team look like?
That was my number one thing. I was wondering if they were going to go there.
Overall, this is a very, very young team. Now, can he get the most out of this young team early? Or is this going to be a team where we kind of just sputter, a lot of mistakes? I think COVID definitely hurt them. From January to beginning of March when you're getting ready for your spring game and then everything gets shut down, that's not helpful at all for any squad, let alone a young squad with a new head coach. But I also am very interested to see with this young of a team, what Mel Tucker is going to do. Is this, like I said, is this team going to compete right away, or are they going to struggle and they're just going to continue to build, like look at a down season next year, kind of get better. And then these guys, junior and senior years, they're just absolute ballers out there.
Yeah, I think, and you kind of alluded to it there, but in my opinion, I think it's Mel Tucker needs to use this year as like a gut check year, because like you said, with everything going on with COVID, the team's young It's not really his team. He's still implementing the system. He's got to get the players in there he wants. It's a good time to find out what you have with your youth, what guys are going to buy in, what guys aren't going to buy in, and kind of just, well, to steal a line from Mike Leach, it might be time to get some guys out of the program that aren't what you want. I mean, he has to – Mark D'Antonio, for everything that he did for Michigan State, he did not leave the program.
No, not at all.
I mean, he, in my opinion, kind of – hurt this program for hanging on as long as he did.
Yeah, and especially how close and how far along they were into recruiting. I mean, what right. what parents going to want their kid to go to school when their coach just pulled out the last minute?
Right. So that to me is Mel Tucker needs to establish an identity of what this team is and find the guys that will buy into it. And if they won't buy into it.
And, you know, in adopting that Mike Leach philosophy, I say you go with Peyton Thorne right out the gate. Let him build a rapport with this young offense, the young receivers, the young running back core, and just run it. And yet, if you get, you're going to get hit up this year, you're going to struggle a little bit, but you're going to learn. And then in a season or two, you guys are going to be ballers.
Right.
Go ahead. That,
no, that's, I was okay. agreeing with you.
You were agreeing with me about Michigan State?
Yeah. You're okay, right on that.
So, kind of a quick run through of this Michigan State squad. It's kind of my thoughts on them. It's going to be a very interesting year. I'm excited to see what Mel Tucker is going to bring to this team because I think we're all sleeping on that it's not going to be a defensive team. But let's not forget that Mel Tucker is a defensive coach.
Right. No, I don't have a whole lot more to add to that. I think you covered a lot of it. You answered the questions that I was going to ask, and you hit on the one thing I thought was the most important thing with Mel Tucker's establishing the identity. Mm-hmm.
I think it's gonna be an interesting year. I'm ready to get it started. I'm ready for him to hopefully surprise some people this season.
Yeah. All right. I think you got any more you want to go to, or should we take
a break? Let's start rolling into Michigan.
Okay. We'll be right back after this.
All right, so it's time for us to dive into the Walmart Wolverines from Ann Arbor. The only good thing about Ann Arbor is Zingerman's Deli. If you haven't had that yet, check out the Reuben. Holy crap, is that thing
that's
good?
It's not the only thing that's good. There's other good restaurants in Ann Arbor, too.
Yeah, it's true, but I go to Zingerman's. I go to Zingerman's.
Zingerman's is a staple.
It is
anybody
a staple.
That's a true Michigan fan would know this. Oh, but I'm just going to completely ignore the Walmart Wolverine comment because it just doesn't deserve the response.
Hey, man, you just go to your local Walmart and you'll see all the stuff on the shelves. Yeah,
that sounds like a Sparty thing. So.
Hey.
All righty. So we'll get into Michigan this year, 2020, the year of COVID, the year that everybody is dying so much for to get a football season. Jim Harbaugh's sixth season, a tenure that has been extremely tumultuous, and everybody had super high expectations that have not been met yet, and, you know, Michigan fans. Having said all that, looking at this 2020 roster and the season, you come into year two of an offense that's run by Josh Gattis, who brought in the more modern up-tempo, his mantra, speed and space, that it did last year. It took a solid 5.5 games before you really saw the offense do anything. It was really in the second half of Penn State last year that you saw that offense kind of take shape into what we hoped it would be. So the ultimate hope here is that when year two, all these guys have seen it, that it can make that step and become an elite offense. Pieces-wise, there's a couple things that play in the favor of that offense to take that step. And there are a couple things that could potentially be hurdles or just a flat out issue. Starting at the quarterback position, obviously anybody that is in the social media stratosphere knows that Joe Milton will be the starting quarterback this year. It came in with him and Dylan McCaffrey were competing, and it came out pretty early that Joe Milton was the leader and it wasn't close. And that prompted McCaffrey to opt out of the season. Rumors are that he's transferring. He still has not transferred. The latest that I've heard is that he's going to stay with the university, finish out the year, graduate, and then grad transfer with 2 years of eligibility left. So I have a feeling you see him head west to Colorado somewhere and play out there next year. But all intents and purposes, Joe Milton is your starting quarterback week one in Minnesota. Joe Milton, everything we've ever heard about him is he's got a freak arm. The dude is 6'5", he's 245, he can throw it 70 yards, standing flat-footed, got a cannon for an arm. I mean, if you could build a quarterback on paper of what you wanted him to look like, it's Joe Milton. I mean, he has all of the physical traits to be elite. The big knock on him has been the consistency and the accuracy. His high school numbers, if you go back and look at them, it tells a lot of stories. I mean, he threw almost as many interceptions as he did touchdowns in high school, and no Division I quarterback should have those kind of numbers. So that's always alarming. When that's kind of common when you have a quarterback with a big arm to have accuracy issues, but you should also be able to complete a 5-yard out regularly.
And you would hope.
And that was something that he struggled with. I mean, but we've seen all summer the videos. It's been all over social media, him working with Devin Gardner, former Michigan quarterback coach. Gardner said nothing but rave reviews about Joe Milton, saying he's one of the most talented players he's ever seen. I'll come out and say this right now. All the hype that Joe Milton is getting, I mean, you've seen the comparisons of he's Cam Newton. He's got an arm like Pat Mahomes with Cam Newton's playmaking ability. We need to stop all that. You're talking about a dude that's played like 30 snaps. He has a lot of potential, no doubt. But putting all those expectations on a player that's only played that limited amount, you're going to do nothing but yourself up for failure. So back off the hype train a little bit. Let's let him play some games. Let's see what he is. Maybe he is that. The reality of it is he's probably not that, and he's hopefully somebody that can help take Michigan to the next step, which we'll get to that in future episodes, what that next step is. But as of today, he's the guy. He looks like everything you'd want, and we'll hope that he has been able to, with all of the work that he's put in, correct his issues that he's had with accuracy and decision-making in the pocket. Because physically, like we said, he's a specimen. Moving forward, a position that I'm not worried about in the least bit is the running back room. Michigan returns pretty much every single player that was a major contributor in the running back room last year, anchored by true sophomore Zach Charbonnet. Love saying that name. It's just such a great name.
Rolls off the tongue.
It does. It does. It's just fun to say. He, as a true freshman last year, was the only reliable back that Michigan really had for a while when they were going through fumbleitis and nobody could hold on to the damn football. They gave it to him, and he did. So it's nice to have your bell cow back. Also, junior Hassan Haskins, who broke out last year after moving back from linebacker, returns. And then the wild card of all wild cards, Chris Evans, comes back after a year suspension where he had academic issues. He was able to write his academics and be re-enrolled to the university, and he is back on the football team. Those of you that remember Evans from a couple years ago, he was a dynamic playmaker in an offense that did not help his skill set. You know, he played with the Harbaugh downhill system, and that's just not what he was. He is a prototypical running back for this offense.
Mm-hmm.
He's excellent in space. He has great hands. I think the veteran leadership that he can bring to a young room that is immensely talented is massive. I think getting this kid back makes a good room great. And it's this running back room, I would argue, is the best in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
As far as top to bottom. I mean, obviously, number one back, maybe they don't have that premier back, but 1 through 4, 1 through 5, I would take Michigan's backfield over any in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think the Haskins, Charbonnet, and Evans, I guess, trio is what you'll call them, is I think that's going to be a pretty potent thing for that offense, especially in a Josh Gattis style offense. That's I mean, what was it? Speed and space, is that?
That's his mantra.
Yeah, so I mean, if you want speed and space, those are three guys that are going to get you speed and space.
Yeah, and then the wild card of the whole thing is true freshman Blake Corum, who comes from Baltimore St. Francis High School, which essentially is a college in high school. I mean, it's kind of like the IMGs and the modern days of the high school world. This kid is being hyped up like crazy by the coaching staff. He will play this year. It's guaranteed because obviously the new rule this year, you don't have to burn a red shirt. Everybody gets a free year of eligibility, basically. He will play. So it'll be interesting to see what he is because he is beloved by every single coach in that offensive room. Moving to the outside, wide receiver, tight end, kind of loop that all together now. It's kind of weird because the Harbaugh era, it was always tight ends, tight ends, tight ends. Now it's more wide receivers, speed and space, get guys space with the ball. So the tight ends kind of fit more into the wide receiver realm in this offense. Tight end-wise, there's really two names, I think, to watch. A third name you'll hear some about, too. Nick Eubanks comes back for his, seems like, sixth year. He's a big body athletic tight end who has a ton of experience. Look for him to take over that number one tight end spot and kind of maybe look to be that red zone presence that they need so desperately in this offense. Especially with the loss of one, somebody we'll get to here in just a moment. Another couple names, Eric All, true sophomore, amazing blocker as far as in line with the running game. And they say as far as pure hands go, he has the best hands on the team. Like you throw it to him, he catches it kind of thing, which is a tight end. That's a reliable weapon to have is always great. And then one other name to watch at tight end is actually, you know what? No, scratch that. Cause he switched positions. We're going to defer there. We'll move on. Wide receiver group. This is another group. One of the main groups of concern that I have because of the loss of one of the players that we mentioned, Nico Collins, has opted out. Now there are a lot of rumors circulating that he is practicing and he's going to play, and Harbaugh is using it as a last minute thing. He's not going to tell anybody, trying to keep it secretive, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. He ain't playing. I'm not insider with anything, but Nico Collins he's opted out. He's going to go to the NFL. Let's just get that out of our head that he's playing. Yes, it hurts. You lose your deep ball threat. You lose your 6'4", 220 senior who catches everything that's thrown his way. You lose that. That's a huge loss in a group that's already pretty thin. So with Nico gone, that really puts a lot of emphasis on Ronnie Bell, who was kind of a breakout last year. And then Giles Jackson, who was a true freshman last year, who kind of made a splash onto the scene as that explosive kind of scat back type. I think you see him play more of a slot role, and you get Ronnie Bell is more the primary focus guy. A couple other names offensively to watch for. Cornelius Johnson came in last year a little bit as a true freshman, made some plays, caught a touchdown pass, I believe, against Michigan State. And then another sophomore, Mike Sainer, still kind of in that Giles Jackson type mold, smaller, scat back, quick twitch guy that Josh Gattis loves. Those, I think, will be your primary four guys. But then you have a couple true freshmen that I think, obviously, again, with the no redshirt year, you will see make an impact in A.J. Henning, who is being compared a lot to Giles Jackson, fast. I think you see a lot of him maybe on special teams, kick return, punt return type of thing, and he'll get some run in the slot as well. And then Roman Wilson, who is the Flying Hawaiian, is what he's being labeled as. He is the fastest player on the team right now. Now there's some debate about that with him and Daxton Hill, but he has laser time 4.3, 4.40. So this kid is a burner, and that kind of speed plays. So with the thin room that the wide receiver group is, I think you could see quite a bit of Roman Wilson and A.J. Henning as well. And then you move into the one position that I am extremely concerned with. And then at the same time, I kind of feel okay at the same time. I know that's weird and it's hypocritical and it's contradictory and all that. But the offensive line does lose 4 out of 5 starters to the NFL. The saving grace is Jalen Mayfield did opt out and then opted back in. So you get your cornerstone and potential first-round pick at right tackle. Continuity on the offensive line is so important. And just to get that one guy who has all of that experience back is huge. But like I said, you are losing four other starters. So you've got to replace all those. It sounds kind of like Ryan Hayes will take over at left tackle. He started last year a couple games for when John Runyon was hurt. So some experience there. And then the guard center guard combo is looking like a Andrew Stuber, Andrew Vastardis, Carson Barnhart, Chuck Filiaga, you know, those kind of four guys really fighting it out to see who's going to fit in there. I think you see some kind of combination of Barnhart, Filiaga, and then Vastardis piecing in there, because Filiaga's a mauler. Carson Barnhart from Pawpaw actually is being raved about by the coaches. They think he could play all five positions on the line. True redshirt freshman. So that's great that somebody like that is developing that quickly. So yeah, the offensive line will be the biggest question mark for me on the offense. But with Ed Warner as their coach, that's the easement that I have, because he is a phenomenal coach. He's proven that time and time again. I mean, he got four guys drafted last year. Two of them are starting. I mean, Mike Onwenu is getting Pro Football Focus's number one grade for offensive linemen left and right now for the Patriots. So that just shows Ed Warner can develop talent, and these guys have been in the system. So like guys like Filiaga is junior, a redshirt junior. So he's been in the program for 4 years already. So you have to hope that Warner has developed that and they're ready to move forward. I think that'll do for the offense for now. I could go a little longer, but we're already running long. So I'll jump into the defense, try to be a little quicker here. On the interior, return. This is probably the strength of our defense this year, because you bring back Kwity Paye, Aiden Hutchinson, and Carlo Kemp. It's all three starters. All three have played a ton of snaps. All three very experienced, very talented players. And then you have the likes of Chris Hinton, Mozzie Smith, Julius Walshoff, and Donovan Jeter to throw in the middle, and then Luigi Villain and a few others, David Ojabo on the edges. This defensive line, Don Brown's been raving about, they're deep. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of weapons there. Move back into the linebacker group. Another pretty experienced group, because you bring back Cam McGrone. And then Josh Ross will step in beside him at the will. McGrone bringing the mic. Josh Ross was the mic last year. Got hurt. McGrone stepped in. Won the job. Now Ross is back. So they'll play side by side. The big question there is who plays Viper. Right now it sounds like it's going to be Mike Barrett. Kind of saw a little bit of him on special teams last year. He's the one that threw the fake punt pass to Daxton Hill in a game last year. Heard a lot about Anthony Solomon, though, potentially pushing him at that Viper position. Another young player out of Baltimore St. Francis that's really making a push to get some starting time. Let's go to safety, because I like the safety group a lot. I think it's probably the best if it stays the way it projects right now, which there's talk about it not. I think as far as two safeties, I think it might be the best duo in the conference with Brad Hawkins and Daxton Hill. Daxton Hill, the five-star true sophomore. There's no more talented player on the team than him. He's elite in every sense. And Brad Hawkins has been nothing but solid his entire career. Criminally underrated last year, and I think he showed that time and time again. These two are fast and can cover. I think as a safety duo, they can be extremely good. Now, there are talks about Daxton potentially moving to corner, because as we get to the corner position, that is probably the weakest point on this entire team, which, knowing Michigan fans and what you hear corners weak, it's like, oh, God, Ohio State's going to score 100 on us now. So with the loss of Ambry Thomas opting out, that is massive, because you took an already thin group and then took your number one away. So it's up to guys like Vincent Gray, Sammy Faustin, DJ Turner, Jalen Perry, Jamon Green. I mean, these guys, two of these guys have got to step in and become a guy right now. Vincent Gray has a lot of snaps from last year, but the rest really haven't played. They're unproven. So big test first game of the year too with Minnesota. Rashad Bateman's going to be there. Who's going to cover him? I think we'll learn a lot there. I think that's probably where you'll see some Daxton Hill moving down and playing corner. A name to watch in that corner room is true freshman Andre Seldon. Kind of blew up on the recruiting trail last year from Belleville because of, like, he won, I don't remember which one of the All-Star games or camps he was at, but he won an award from Deion Sanders for something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he locked down everybody he faced. And this kid, he's small. He's only 5'8". So that's like, if he was 6 foot, he would have been a 5-star is what everybody said. Because he's smaller, it just hindered him so much. So he's a player that I see kind of stepping in and getting some time on the defensive secondary. Special teams is another spot where I think Michigan's going to be really good. Kicker-wise, Quinn Nordin is back after a good bounce back year last year where he had a little bit of the yips year before. He kind of righted the ship last year, so as a graduate senior. Big leg, it's nice to have that. Well, hopefully he can continue his consistency. And Jake Moody's right behind him, who has been proven a lot in the shorter range of accuracy, so that's good to have. And punter, Will Hart is back. Not a whole lot you need to really say there. He's been around. He's been solid. He's been very consistent. So I expect that to continue for him. Kind of like what Lane did with his key things for this year. To me, it comes down to three things. I kind of touched on them all. One, number one, Joe Milton. Michigan will never beat Ohio State until they have elite quarterback play. So can Joe Milton be that elite quarterback play? Two, the fluidity of the offensive line. Can they gel together and can they become not just good but a great unit? Because I think to be where Michigan wants to be, they have to be a great unit. And two, who steps in to be that corner opposite Vincent Gray, and maybe those two corners opposite of Vincent Gray to really help that secondary, because really on a defense that's the only glaring hole is the corner position. So I kind of threw a lot at you all there at once, and I don't even think I gave you a second to interject. Do you have any thoughts, questions?
No, you know, I guess my biggest question is as a Michigan fan, when you look at like a Don Brown led defense, and last year, what was it Ohio State had put up? Was it 60? Was that?
I've scrubbed okay. that from my memory.
So you bleached so it.
It's 100. It's 110.
Okay. If say you get into the season, and yes, you have a very young secondary, you have some definite question marks there. If you guys struggle, and say you get to that Ohio State game, and say it's same stuff, different day, do you think it's time for Don Brown to go?
I thought it was time for Don Brown to go after last game. Don Brown's defenses are great against bad teams and struggle against good teams. Now, if you can get the Alabama athletes, then that defense will work against anybody. But let's face it, Michigan doesn't have the Alabama athletes. So I do think Don Brown is nearing the end. I mean, he's up there in age. But, yeah, we can't keep giving up those points.
Okay. So then I guess my next question is then it's just kind of following along that coaching train. Harbaugh. I mean, do you – if, say, they don't take the next step this year, and say you guys aren't competing again for another Big Ten title, what – I mean, granted, a 6-3 team, a lot of teams would kill for right now. Do you think that's still enough? Do you think a third-place finish in the Big Ten is still good enough? Or do you think that the seat needs to start getting warm for John Harbaugh? Jim Harbaugh. Excuse me.
Let's put it to you short and sweet. Jim Harbaugh's seat will never be warm at Michigan unless he wants it to be warm. Whether or not the fan base likes it, the results don't matter near as much to the school and to the boosters as what he's doing revenue-wise for that program. I mean, the money that he's bringing in and everything that he's doing is 10 times bigger than the wins and losses to all of those boosters and donors. So the fans might start screaming and hollering, but until Jim Harbaugh wants to leave, he's not going anywhere.
That's fair.
I mean, it's the simple business of the thing. I mean, like it's money. Everything in this world comes down to dollars and cents, and he's bringing in money. Whether it's from boosters, whether it's from donors, whether it's from fans being in the stands, he's bringing
them. That's
in.
Fair.
So he doesn't go anywhere. And in all honesty, we say if he doesn't take the next step, but it's like, what is the next step? You know, is it just beating Ohio State? Is it winning the Big Ten title? I think that's the problem. Like, we as Michigan fans, nobody really knows what that next step is, but they talk about it all the time. So, I mean, if you look at it, what Harbaugh's done in his five seasons is actually pretty impressive by comparison across the country. I mean, he took a team that was around 500 every year and sinking into worse than that and got them back to winning 10 games regularly. He got them to a point where they were with a bad spot away from being in the Big Ten title game and a shot at a playoff. I mean, this Michigan program is in a better shape than it's been in the last 15 years, and it's not even questioned.
That's fair.
So I know Michigan fans are upset. Michigan fans are always going to be upset because that's just what Michigan fans do. Along with Texas fans, we're probably two of the worst fan bases because we always think we deserve better when nothing in most of our lifetimes suggests that we should have anything better. Alrighty, everybody, welcome back. We will keep this last little segment short and sweet because I'm long-winded and drug this longer than I was supposed to. So we are going to touch on a little bit of NFL Lions and then close this down and get out of here for the week. So, Lane, why don't you give us what you got?
So, if you watched the NFL this past week, and Falcons blew another loss, so Dan Quinn was fired. And if you also remember, the Falcons were in the Super Bowl a few years ago and blew a 28-3 lead against the New England Patriots. So then you ask yourself, why am I bringing up Dan Quinn? And that is because that is another coach that has a better overall record, but a losing record this season that has been fired. So you look at the Lions, they travel to Jacksonville this weekend, but face the Gardner Mania, the Minshew Mania Jaguars, which...
The mustache.
We
should just start calling him the stash.
We should start calling him the stash. You know, he like looks like a Natter Days spokesman. You know what I'm... You know,
yeah, absolutely. Or Keith Stone from the old Keith Stone.
Oh, even better. Keith Stone.
Yeah.
Anyways, so yes, Lions go on the road to Jacksonville this weekend. Jacksonville is 1-4. The Lions are 1-3. And you look at this squad and you think the Lions have to win this game, right? I mean... The Jaguars are not that good, but then you start to think about it. The Jags have a pretty decent rookie running back. Receiving core is not that bad. You know, at this point, I just want to see what they can do. I mean, I feel like playoffs are already out for this team.
Tank for Trevor.
See, you in that damn tank for Trevor. Anyways, so... You look at the team, and I think if they lose this week, I don't think you see Matt Patricia get fired. And I think that's solely because you see the overall record of the teams that in their next seven games that they face. And it's optimistic. Is it probable that they win them? No. But I don't know. It just all remains to be seen. I'm kind of tired of the same old crap with this Lions team. So I'm just hoping we go into this weekend, we take care of business, get a win, and we go from there. I definitely don't want them to lose, but if they lose, I definitely want them to change directions and change direction pretty quick.
Tank for Trevor, fire Patricia, hire Dabo.
Ugh.
Will that fit in a hashtag?
I'm trying to think how many characters. It might fit. You should start. That's what we're going to get known for.
That'll be our hashtag. Tank
for Trevor, fire Patricia.
Hire Dabo.
Hire Dabo. I think we got enough characters there.
We can make it work.
I like it. I like it, man. No, so, I mean, Lions, they are what they are. We'll have to see what happens. The Jags defense is nowhere what it used to be. No Jalen Ramsey. We'll see. But with that, I mean, I think that kind of wraps up our show for the week. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think we're probably pretty good. We've rambled long enough. So like we said to begin, though, if you haven't already, please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, whatever platform you are listening to this on, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, I believe even has it now, which is strange. Watershed Voice is bringing this out, too, so their platform that they're using. Please subscribe to this, rate, review us. That helps us get branch out to other areas, and people, when they get to their searches, especially on Apple Podcasts, when they search, it goes off of ratings. So give us that rate, review, and subscribe. And if you haven't, please look up Watershed Voice. They are grateful. We are grateful for them. They're mm-hmm. helping us branch out a little bit more and broaden our horizons, and we would appreciate it if our listeners would do the same for them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if you guys haven't, like Jordan said, take a look at us. Thank you again for tuning in this week. But I think that's it for me, man. I'm tired. I've dove deep enough tonight. I'm ready to go eat some dinner and take a nap or go to bed. Actually,
I'll be honest with you, I got my scuba gear. I'm ready to go deeper.
Scuba Steve. All right. With that, thank you guys. Go green.
Go blue.